Brilliant. I will never forget the feeling of being lost in the supermarket when I was little more than a toddler. Has anyone else ever got lost in the supermarket? Okay, yeah. It's a horrible, horrible feeling. Why don't you just turn to the people who are near to you and discuss if there's a time you can remember being lost. Maybe it was in the supermarket, maybe it's someone else. As a child, or even as an adult, where you've got lost somewhere and you felt like, I'm lost. Can you think of any time? So just chat with the people on your table for 1 minute. Can you think of a time when you've been lost? Okie doke. So it's quite a vulnerable feeling to be lost when you have that moment of panic where I don't know where I am or I don't know where the people that I need to find are. It's quite a difficult feeling to experience. Just this week, I went to a place with the family called Forbidden Corner up in North Yorkshire. It's like, is it like number one TripAdvisor destination or something in Yorkshire, okay? Which basically puts it top of the list. And it's the place called Forbidden Corner. It's basically this whole garden area. It's huge. That's designed as like a, it's like a puzzle. You have to find your way around this place. There's no map. And you get stuck and lost in all sorts of different places. And there's bits where you go up into a tower and you go down to the staircase thinking you're going to come down the other side. And you end up in a tunnel that goes underground for like 100 meters. And so, yes, I went into a, I had Caleb with me and we went into a room. We'd lost Abby. And then she'd gone off somewhere. And we went into this room and we went through, there's loads of doors and you don't know which one to go through and you're on the ground and it's dark and Caleb had his torch and we opened this door and we stepped in and closed the door behind us. We realised we were on a revolving floor. So the room's about this big. Like as far as you can, we're on a revolving floor and there were 8 doors around and you don't know which door to go through and you open one and it's like there's a skeleton in there and you open another one and it's a passage that goes one way, you open another. And there was a brief moment where I was there and I was like, I think I'm lost. And I had that feeling of like that you get childhood when you're lost in the supermarket or something, that almost, I was beginning to get that moment of panic. I was like, I've not felt that for a very long time, even though when Abby's navigating, we get lost all the time. When we consider, we've been thinking about, as we've gone through this Sermon on the Mount, we've been thinking about the question of faithfulness. Faithfulness. And when we talk about faithfulness, we must always begin with God's faithfulness to us. That's our starting point for all of this discussion, that actually the truth is that it's God's faithfulness to us that we can hang everything else on. This is an amazing parable that I'm sure you know, because it's one of the most famous ones where shepherd has 100 sheep. You know this one, don't you? And there's one sheep that goes running off. And the shepherd is willing to leave behind the 99 that are safe in their enclosure in order to go off to search for the sheep that has gone missing. And of course, that the picture of the sheep is a picture of us, that at times we wander away from God. And the amazing truth about God's faithfulness to us is that when we've wandered off and we're lost and we're a bit confused about where we are, He comes to seek us and to find us. Isn't it amazing that we have a God who's willing to do that just for us, just the one sheep? He's got 99 others, just kind of like, most of us would be like, just forget the other one, it's fine. But God doesn't. He's so faithful to us. So it's His faithfulness to us, it's the fact that we're that sheep that He's willing to find that compels us, I think, to be faithful to Him. Certainly for me, when I see God's faithfulness to me, that's what makes me say, okay, God, I need to be serious about being faithful to You. But more than that, I think also God's faithfulness to us compels us to be faithful to other people as well, to demonstrate His goodness, to demonstrate His faithfulness, and to be a faithful witness in the way that we relate to other people. In other words, if we're being a faithful friend, a faithful son or daughter, a faithful husband or wife, all of those things are a way in which we demonstrate, I think, God's faithfulness to us, to the world around us. In other words, the way that we conduct our human relationships says something about our relationship with God, that His faithfulness to us is reflected out to the world around us. So what I want to do is have a little walk through the Bible passage that Vicky read, which has some really challenging, difficult things in there, and to see what kind of faithfulness it is that Jesus is calling out of us, out of his faithfulness to us. And the first question that we hit against is adultery. So verses 27 and 28 say this: "You have heard it said, you shall not commit adultery, but I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Before I look at that in detail, one of the greatest, I think, examples of faithfulness that we experience in our world and our lives beyond the faithfulness of Christ to us is the bond of marriage, that gift that God has given to us. You know, marriage is a serious business because the faithfulness is based on a bond between a man, a woman, and God. It's not just two people. There are three people in the relationship of a marriage. And it's a commitment that God designed to be lifelong, one that reflects the commitment of Christ to the church that Jesus has for us as his body, not just Glow Church, but the church worldwide. That's why, for example, the marriage course coming up is something that's really important, a really good investment, because marriage matters hugely to the way that God deals with his people. I'm aware as we think about the question of marriage that amongst our church family, our friends here and those who aren't here, there is brokenness in our experience that we either hope that we'd be married and we're not, or we have our own broken marriages that have caused significant pain and difficulty, or perhaps we're in the middle of challenges at the moment, regrets, failures, mistakes. So I want to preface all of the stuff that God is saying to us through this passage with two things. Nothing is beyond God's grace, and no one is beyond God's love. And that counts for every single one of us, no matter what our situation, what we've done, what we've been through. None of us are too far away. All of us are like that sheep that God continues to pursue and chase after because he loves us. Nothing is too big that would separate us from his love. But at the same time, the seriousness of what Jesus says to us about faithfulness in marriage remains of in huge importance to us and very countercultural to our world around that sees marriage as something that's kind of dispensable, optional, part-time, temporary, and all those things. So in marriage, a couple are charged with the responsibility, actually. And I'm sure you've all been to a wedding, that the words talk about a lifelong faithful commitment. Husbands and wives aren't sort of disposable, recyclable goods. But actually, when that ceremony happens, when God and two people make that covenant agreement, that's something that's bound together for an entire life. If you're here and hoping to get married one day, then that's something to really ponder, that it's the biggest human commitment you could ever possibly make. One that God intends to be lifelong, and one that's actually, although it's loads of fun, is a very serious business, something to take very seriously. So we come across this pattern here in the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus uses two things opposed to each other. He says, first of all, you've heard it said, and then he talks about the law. So the things that people have established as rules and laws that we talked about a few weeks back. And the law is good. There's nothing wrong with that. But remember, Jesus came to bring a new type of righteousness that was better beyond the law. So he says, you've heard it said, and that's the law. And then he says, but I tell you this. And then what Jesus says is about his greater righteousness, his better way for us. So as we see those two things, don't forget, the law is good. But actually, Jesus, it's like an upgrade. It's a better version that Jesus has for us. So the law says, here in these verses that we've just read, don't have an affair. Do not commit adultery. Don't sleep with someone who you're not married to. That's what the law says. And yes, that is correct and good. And now that, to me, and many of us seems like a very simple statement, but that in itself is something which is questioned often by our culture and society. But that kind of Jesus takes that as a given. Like that's not even, no one's debating that as far as Jesus is concerned. But then Jesus brings this huge challenge, like when I dropped the microphone before, that just hits. He says that looking at another person lustfully is doing exactly the same thing. Okay? So here again, we've got this dynamic between the action, the simple action of the law, and actually more, not more importantly, but equally as important, what's going on in our hearts. That if we commit adultery in our minds, if we consider being unfaithful to our husband or wife, if we use our bodies in a way which isn't honouring to God when we're not married, then that's like doing the same thing. Jesus raises the bar significantly for us. It's a real challenge to us and to our culture. So whether you're married or not married, these questions remain the same. How does your behaviour towards those that you aren't married to honour God or not? Are there issues maybe you need to ponder about the way you relate to other people that you're not married to? Do you look at people lustfully in a way? Now, Jesus begins to list different parts of the body. So he talks about the eyes. Do you look at people lustfully in a way that dishonours them and maybe is offensive to God? Do you have unhealthy, lustful patterns, attitudes, and habits that you know you need to deal with God? Or do you see each person as a child of God? Do you recognize that actually the people that sometimes society causes us to, or we ourselves cause to objectify, that actually those people are children of God, made in his image, that God wishes us to honour, to love, and to empower in the right ways. And then we come across this kind of really crazy bit. Actually, I forgot to put the verses up here, where Jesus then starts to talk about chopping bits of your body off. Okay? That's quite serious. Okay? So he says, if your eyes cause you to lust, as in if you to look at someone and go, when you shouldn't go, then... I don't think anybody makes that noise, but if you were to do that, then Jesus said it would be better to like prod your eye out than to live with that sin. Now, Jesus isn't saying by any means that actually like self-mutilation is a good thing, okay? That's not, you know, if your hand causes you to sin, chop it off. Literally, none of us would have any bits of our body left. You know, And as someone very clever once pointed out, like, even a blind person can lust. So Jesus isn't saying, actually, that's something we have to do. But what he's doing is he's drawing our attention to the fact that sin in this area, lustfulness, and the abuse, actually, of other people and the way that we think, and sometimes the things that we do, they're very serious. It has a huge effect on our souls, on our own bodies, and on the lives of other people. And he's trying to highlight the fact to us that actually these sins, these problems, they need dealing with, and we need to take them very, very seriously. So maybe there's some challenge there for some of us. Sin is toxic. We should do all that we can to prevent it growing in us. Are there actions and responses that you need to make in order to address some stuff that is happening? It's a big challenge, very difficult. Okay, verse 31. Jesus moves on to then the question of divorce. And he uses these two things again. You've heard it said. And then he says, but I tell you. So you've heard it said, or it has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. Okay, so according to the custom of the time, men had most of the power and control in these situations, as has unfortunately been the case through a lot of history. And a man was simply able to write a note, hand it to his wife, and she was divorced. That was it. And certainly culturally, for the people that Jesus was speaking to, that would leave the woman in a very difficult situation, both financially and socially, to be in that place. So men had all the power to just be able to go, yeah, I've had enough. Now, interestingly, that is very much the kind of situation more and more we've moved to as a culture, where both man and wife are able to pretty easily just say, I want a divorce. That's it. We're done. But Jesus, again, he says, you've heard it said, this is the law, but I've got a better idea. I've got a better way of doing things. Jesus says the covenant of marriage is binding. Like, it's not that easy. Like, according to the law, you might be able to do that, but in the Father's eyes, actually, marriage doesn't go away. It was already understood at the time that the covenant of marriage was lifelong. And so it was understood that if somebody in the marriage dies, then that is the covenant broken. So somebody can remarry after their spouse has died. That's normal. But Jesus is taking it to the next level. He's clear in saying, actually, the only reason for divorce is marital unfaithfulness, is adultery. And the reason he says that is because this covenant between God and man and wife that is made, that when that is broken, and actually the way that that is most seriously and severely broken is through marital unfaithfulness, through adultery. It's something that's can be made light of in the way that our culture operates around sexuality and different things. But it shows how serious it is that that's the one thing that Jesus says. If you do that to your husband or wife, that is grounds for divorce. That is a reason, because the covenant that you made has been very seriously broken and damaged. Not always irreparable, like as in it is possible to repair a marriage after those things happen. But it is the only reason that God says to someone, yeah, you're in a right situation to be able to step away from that marriage if that's happened. That's how serious the use of our bodies is in God's eyes when it comes to sex and sexuality. For those of you who are divorced or separated or have experienced some of these challenges, again, I just want to point you back to the fact that no one is beyond God's grace. No one is beyond God's love. The parable of both the lost sheep and the lost son tell us that God comes searching for us and he's always waiting for us. There's nothing we can do that can separate us from him, and there's always forgiveness and he always receives us. But at the same time, for those of us who are married, it doesn't reduce the significance and importance of investing in our marriages to ensure that our marriages are lifelong. So how do we ensure that we invest, and this is for those who are married currently or hope to be married one day, how do we ensure that we can invest in our spouse? So that when the tough times come, and they will come, and they do come, those who are married will know that it's not easy. That you're able to invest in the good times so that you're able to withstand the challenges of marriage. And again, the marriage course will be a great way to explore some of these things. I just want to suggest four things that I wrote down, a little list. One, go to the marriage course. Have I said that already? Yeah, do that. Two, talk intentionally together about your marriage. In your marriage or in your marriage that you hope to have one day, will you plan to sit down and have conversations about difficult things, areas that you disagree, different ways of doing things? Are you able to talk openly about the challenges that you face in a way that helps you to move through the difficultness of the situation in order to get to the other side? Thirdly, pray and seek God together regularly. Have you gotten out of the habit as a couple of praying together? Do you do it every day? If not every day, do you do it most days? Is that something that is important to you? Because investing in that is probably the best thing that you can do for your marriage. And then fourthly, very simple, choosing to give love before you receive it. It's very easy in a marriage to wait for the other person to break the silence or to deal with the issue and say sorry first or whatever. It is. But how do you choose to give love first without waiting for it to be received first? So just four thoughts there. And then we move on to the third and final bit of this passage, which kind of sums up the whole thing together and hopefully is helpful to those of us who aren't specifically thinking about the marriage context today. Verses 33 to 36. Again, you've heard it said, it's again on this side, that people said to people long ago, don't break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you've made. Okay, so that's good. Like, if you've made a vow, don't break it. That's good. It's a good law. But I tell you, do not swear on an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by earth, for it is God's footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black, or make them reappear, if that's a problem that you're experiencing. If you follow football, I don't know how many of you do it here, but Harry Kane is this man here. He is an exceptionally good striker. Okay, he plays for Spurs, Tottenham Hotspur, and he's also England's best player. Hopefully going to do the job for the World Cup in the summer. An interesting incident with him in the last week that you may have seen if you read the newspapers or see any sports news, that his teammate, Christian Eriksen, had a shot like across during the game, and he hit the ball and it was curling into the top corner, and Harry Kane comes running at the far post and kind of glances it into the goal, just kind of gets a little touch on it. At least we thought he had. So he got given a goal, and then afterwards they looked at it and said, no, he didn't touch it, so he doesn't get the goal. And then so he came out doing loads of like social media videos and stuff saying, I definitely touched the ball, it's definitely my goal. I thought he was being a bit childish about it, but that's another issue. But then, and he ended up getting awarded the goal in the end after he had like an independent review and all this stuff. Big drama. No one here cares. That's okay. but he did this thing which really made me feel uncomfortable, where in one of these videos that he posts online, he said, I swear on my daughter's life that it was my goal. And it just made me squirm inside. I thought, oh. And what he was trying to say, and this is a common thing, what he was trying to say is, like, I want to prove to you 100% that I'm right, that I'm telling the truth. And so people swear on different things. I swear on my daughter's life. And it made me squirm so much. And then when I read this this week, I was like, no wonder it makes us squirm, because Jesus told us not to do it. There's an instinct in us which says it's not great. So what does Jesus suggest instead? He says, and our different translation says it this way, verse 37, let your yes be yes and your no be no. I love that as a simple summary of what it means to be faithful. If you say yes, mean it and do it. If you say no, mean that and don't do it, or do it, whatever it means. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. That means being faithful to the promises we've made. And for some people here, that means the commitments that you made when you got married. But for some of us, it's other things as well. For some of us, it's just the day-to-day things. And I just want to encourage us for a moment, and this is a word from the Lord, try not to be too English, okay? So we have a really bad habit of saying yes to things that we know the actual answer is no. We commit to doing things because we'd rather not upset someone by saying no, but actually what we mean is no. So we say yes and then we don't actually do it. I do this far too often. I want to encourage you, if the answer to a question, so if someone, for example, your boss from work comes to you at the end of the day, can you get this done to me before tomorrow morning? You kind of say, oh, I don't know. And you know you haven't got the time. You go, yeah, I think I can. Yeah, I might be. Hopefully, I'll be able to get that done. And you say, hopefully, I'll be able to get that done, knowing full well there's no chance you're going to get it done. Instead of just being able to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I'll do it by this time or whatever. There's all sorts of situations in life where sometimes we'll just on a whim we'll say yes, when actually what we need to do is have the authority and the power to be able to say no. No isn't a popular word, but it's a very important one. How good are you at saying yes when you mean yes and no when you mean no? Christ is faithful to us. Two questions. Do we want to be faithful to him? Yeah. Yes. Do you mean yes? yeah. Good. Christ is faithful to us. Do we want to be faithful to him? Yes. Do we want to be faithful to those around us? Yes. Good. Okay, newsflash. You're not capable of it. Okay? You're not... Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. You stole my line too. That's great. Yeah, no, you're spot on. We're not capable of it in our own strength. You know, faithfulness, yes, is about working hard when things are tough and sticking to it and digging in, you know, whether it's in like a marriage situation where things are hard and it's like, yeah, you do have to work hard. And whether it's work or family life or home or an argument with the neighbours, whatever's going on, it sometimes means really working hard and digging in. But effort is not enough on its own. We can't do it alone. We need the power of the Holy Spirit. If we're going to be faithful to God, if we're going to be faithful to other people, we need the power of the Spirit. We need supernatural assistance. I wonder if you know the list of the fruits of the Spirit, the things that grow in us when we spend time with God. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Faithfulness is a fruit of the Spirit. So that means it's something we can't just muster up entirely on our own strength. We need the Holy Spirit with us. So the best thing that we can do for our marriages, for our close relationships, our relationships with our family and friends, and our relationship with God, is to devote ourselves to Christ. That is ultimately the best thing we can do. And to be filled with the power of the Holy Spirit. And what better place to do that than at church on a Sunday afternoon? So, can I invite you, if you're able, to stand with me, please? And we're just going to spend a bit of time responding to God. I realise it's 5 o'clock, so... But I just don't want to disappear off before having a chance to respond to him. If you're comfortable and happy to do so, sometimes it can be helpful to close your eyes, just so we're not distracted by the things going on around us. We're just going to take a moment each individually just to have a bit of time to meet with God. And we're going to start that by just waiting for a little bit. Welcome back, everyone from Glow Kids. We're just about to spend a bit of time praying, so if you want to come and join us. Don't always ask you to be quiet, but if you could just be still for a moment, that would be really helpful for us. Thank you. And you can join in too. So Holy Spirit, as we wait for you now, I just pray that you would send your Holy Spirit, send yourself, God, that you'd come and fill us with your presence, that you'd meet with us here. Come, Holy Spirit. Come, Holy Spirit of God.